Hello and welcome to Tops 10, brought to you by KTXT Radio and the College of Media and Communication at Texas Tech University in beautiful Lubbock. Tops 10 seeks out successful and influential people in politics and government, the many professions, the physical and social sciences, or the arts and humanities, and asks them to reveal their lives, ideas, and ideals through their playlist. Our format is simple. We ask our guests what pieces of music mean the most to them and tell us the story behind the infatuation. Mr. Derek Ginter is our producer-engineer, and I'm David Perlmutter, professor at and dean of the college and the originator and host of Tops 10. Today, I have with me a very special guest, Jenny Dale Lord. Now, we're going to do something different. Jenny Dale Lord is a very, very successful musician. And what I probably should be doing, which I didn't do last time when we interviewed Kenny Mayne's, but I want to do now, is instead of asking you what songs of other people mean the most to you, and I think it was, you said the Barney song was number one.
Actually, I'm a little most too influential. Old for that one, but okay. It's pretty close.
Yeah. So we're going to ask you about your music, and I ask you to send me the 10 songs which mean the most to you, and we're going to start to understand the story of your life and also the story of your music and your career behind the music.
Absolutely. As a songwriter, more often than not, I really do put my experiences and my life into my music. I have a few which I jokingly refer to as creative writing. But yes, I've said many times that the quickest way to get to know me personally is through my music. So if that is your goal, I think you're headed the right direction.
Well, sir. It's an exciting goal. I want to start with something very simple. What is a day in the life of a country and music singer like, if he could maybe compile, and don't spare us the salacious details or the boring details.
Well, you know, social media is a big part of everyone's world these days, so I know that you have a Facebook page, and thank you for being my friend. There's a meme that goes around on Facebook that has like the four pictures. It's like the life of a musician, and it's like my mom thinks I do this, and it's this crazy rock star doing all kinds of drugs, and you know, my friends think I do this, and it's just really funny. So if you've not ever seen those, they're pretty hilarious. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into being a musician that I think a lot of people don't realize. And I credit my mass communications degree for actually helping me with a lot of the more mundane tasks of being a musician. Of course, the nightlife is obviously the most fun part. And you go out and play music. And if you're lucky, you get to put some money in your pocket and have a good time. But during the daytime, I actually spend most of my time on the business side of things. I'm contacting venues about gigs, you know, trying to tour as much as possible. Creating websites, putting out press releases, a whole bunch of just mundane tasks, discussing how much can I get paid if I drive 12 hours across Texas to go play there, things like that. And then if I'm lucky, I can squeeze in some time to actually write music, which I'm sad to say I don't do that as much as I'd like to, but hopefully that'll be changing.
Now, you are a graduate for our college, and tell
Heads
us a little
up.
bit about that. You majored in
electronic media and communications. I think it has a different title now, doesn't it? I think things have changed a lot. In fact, when I went to school here, which wasn't that long ago, I graduated in 2012, we had a totally different building on the other side of the campus. So this is an amazing building, and I'm jealous I didn't get to be here. Yeah, it's great. I studied under DG, who's doing the producing back there. Shout out to my friend over there. Yeah, it was really great. I had a lot of influential teachers that I still stay in touch with to this day, and really, I'm thinking about coming back to you and getting my master's. We'll see.
That's terrific. So let's start with something simple there. You have to be a very sharp, shrewd business person as well as a creative artist at the point of your career now where you're not Taylor Swift yet,
right?
But you've already established yourself so people know your name in venues in Dallas and San Antonio and Amarillo. So you're in that sort of interstage where you're not like, you can't get a gig except at an open mic night.
Right.
But you still don't have 7 personal assistants, a chauffeur, a butler, and a cook, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. I make enough money to pay my bills, but I don't make enough money to hire anybody to help me with anything. Yeah, that's exactly. Which a lot of people in this business at the earlier levels don't even make enough money to pay their bills. So I'm completely and totally blessed.
That's a very famous distinction, I guess. What is a professional? Somebody who makes enough money to live on what they do. I mean, there's a lot of people who like play a little bit or write something on the side, but you actually make a total living from being a singer. So you're successful in the way that 100,000 other people with dreams are not.
Well, I think, you know, getting to do what you love every single day and it supporting you is all the success that I need. Would I love to be Taylor Swift someday? Not exactly, but sort of, yes. But I'm totally happy being where I'm being, and I'm going to keep working. And to go back to your earlier point, I don't know that I'm a shrewd business person, but you definitely have to be dedicated, and you have to know where you want to go. And it is self-employment, which a lot of people aren't built for self-employment, I don't think, because they're not determined or dedicated enough to make yourself do what you have to do every single day to continue on what you're doing. And I had a learning curve with that. You know, of course, I'd rather just be lazy and hang out and then just go play. But you will never get anywhere if you don't push yourself to reach out to different people in different venues every single day. And I may not be reaching out to just venues. I may be, hey, I need a promoter. I need a manager. You know, I'm always constantly trying to reach out to people who will give me a chance in whatever avenue that I'm seeking at the time. And you have to definitely keep doing that if you ever want to be successful, I think.
I apologize ahead of time, but one stereotype of artists is they're not actually very smart. They're very creative.
Right.
But practicality and pragmatism and sort of business sense. In fact, if you think about all those movies where there's a very talented actress, very talented songwriter, singer, and they make terrible business decisions or people cheat them. And Hank Williams, very famous, you know, Kenny Mayne's told me that famous comment about Hank Williams is like, he had a $1 billion voice and a 10-cent mind. I've gotten to know you a little bit, and I certainly know people who know you, and people say that you are highly intelligent. Does that get in the way of being a successful country and western star to be intelligent?
I don't, you know, honestly, I don't know that it gets in the way so much as maybe sometimes it hinders my creativity, believe it or not. I think I'm very hard on myself and on the words that I use and on the sentences that I write. And yes, I have a big thing about proper grammar, and I like good vocabulary. And so it's sometimes hard for me to just let myself just do what I need to do and just write a song, because it's not just a song. You've heard my albums. I've been told it's sometimes more
poetic.
They are poetic.
Grammatically, punctuationally correct.
That is
which
true.
Is a shock. I mean, that's a very interesting question. It's like, do you ever like write a lyric and it feels good from the heart, but you're going, no, my journalism professor would not approve of
all
that phrase.
All the time. I mean, I sometimes have to tell myself, you sing country music, go ahead and say ain't. Go ahead and say don't when it should say doesn't. Yes, I have that battle all the time. And so it really does hinder me in a way. But yes, as a mass comm major with journalism courses under my belt and as the daughter of an English teacher, sometimes it's very hard to just let that go.
Do you visualize and hear in your head the music as it's playing? And so you sort of sense that, yes, the wording might not be what I would write if I were taking an advanced poetry class or a journalism class, but it makes sense for the feeling I'm trying to express and the music that I'm going to write to match it.
Occasionally, that is the case. Usually, for me, I focus more on the words than I do the music. And I tend to write songs, which some people tell me is odd, from start to finish together at the same time, the music and the words. It's not often that I have some words and I go, now I need to put music to it, or I have music and I go, now I need to put words. And so when I build them together, except for the amount of syllables that I try to match up just for the actual song itself, I usually can build that, and so it's not often a struggle. I don't have any songs that say yeah, 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 or oh, 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 and that's really hard. I do have songs that I have just sat down and said, all right, just get your ego out of it. Write a song that people are just going to want to dance to and have fun with. And know it may not be your favorite song, but chances are people are going to love it. And that, honestly, that's some of my biggest hits, for lack of a better word, are exactly like that. They're not deep, meaningful songs in any way, but people just like to have a good time to them. And so I try to do that sometimes. I allow my songs that I write for me to be differently, and we're actually going to discuss a lot of those today. But then, like I said, sometimes I go, all right, I'm writing this one for me, I'm writing this one for y'all. I'm writing this one for me, I'm writing this one for y'all. And I try to find a balance of commercialism versus creativity, depthness, whatever you want to call it.
So let's listen to the first one, Find the Words, appropriately.
I'm still trying to find the words. Something perfect I can see. And every day I try so hard. I sit right down with my guitar and try to think how to possibly find the words to tell you how I wish that you were here. Find the words to say how much I'd give to have you near. Find the words to show the pain inside, the hole you left with your goodbye, and how much it hurts. But I just can't find. Still trying to find a tune, one that fits just like it should. But every day my flat top plays as if it don't know what to say or how it would. If I ever could find the words tell you how I wish that you were here. Find the words to say how much I'd give to have you near. Find the words to show the pain inside, the hole you left with your goodbye, and how much it hurts. But I just can't find the words.
Let's start out. You begin the song by saying, I'm still trying to find the words. So that's the basic question all artists are asked. You're sitting there. Now, are you typing? You have a piece of paper?
Actually, I type. Yeah. It's I can write a lot faster on the computer than I can with my handwriting.
So you're staring at a computer screen.
Yeah.
Describe the physical environment. Do you have something there, a little statue of Elvis? Do you have anything that you use for inspiration, a cat that you use for inspiration?
Well, oddly
besides
enough,
a screen.
My cats do love to sit on my lap when I compose, which I think is totally precious. No, mostly I just try to put myself in a really quiet, somewhat darkened environment, even if it's the middle of the day, just to where it's a little bit darker, and just pull out my guitar and my computer, and I will just try to figure out what I'm trying to say or what I want to write, and just, like I said, start top to bottom and go down.
So you are playing the guitar in front of the computer. Are
yes.
you recording
I
and
don't,
typing at the same time?
No, I don't record until I finish the song. And I record it at the end of it just so I don't forget what I did. And you know, when it's so new and you're like, oh, how did I do that? And I just do that on my iPhone. Thank goodness for technology. Just hit the memo button and start recording. And yeah, that's when I do that. But yeah, just a computer and my guitar and my cats on my lap. That's pretty much it.
Every day I try so hard to sit down with my guitar and try to think how to possibly find the words. And you do find the words. In fact, you said that you're working on another album right now and you're sitting down to try to write songs.
Yeah, I have half of it written already, and I hope to have it completed by the end of the year so I can go into the studio in January to make my fourth album. But Find the Words was particularly hard for me because usually, although it's not always the case, when I decide I want to write a song, I can sit down and I can write a song. But Find the Words in particular was about the passing of my dad. He's technically my stepdad, but he's really the only dad I'd ever known. So he is and always will be my dad. And I knew as a songwriter, that I had to write about that moment, because that's what songwriters do. We take the moments that matter the most to us and put them in a song. And I don't know if that subject was just too intense or something that I wasn't quite ready to broach. I'm not exactly sure, but I just couldn't find the words. And I just tried and I tried and I tried. And finally, I threw my hands up one day and I said, I'm never going to find the words. And then something clicked, and I was like, well, maybe that should be how I choose to approach the song, is that I'm trying to find the words to sing about this incredibly difficult topic. And once I looked at it from that angle, it came pretty quickly. So it's, in particularly, was hard to find the words.
It's a beautiful song.
Thank you. It's my favorite from the album. We brought in some really great instrumentalists. As you heard, we have cello and violins and just this really great string arrangement to back up the electric guitars and just the... My dad was really big rock and roll fan, so I knew that the song I wrote for him had to have rockier edge than perhaps some of my others. I hope that if he hears it from heaven, that he likes it. Maybe it makes him smile.
That's a beautiful thought. I'm sure it's true. Next song is In This Town.
It's more than just the wind or the plains that go for miles. It's a sunset sky burning like a firewire. And it's more than just the oil or the high school football team. It's a Friday night cheering in the stands with me. It's the place my parents met, and I was born, where I broke my bones and broke my heart. It's the dirt road where I learned more than how to drive, and I'm thankful I was given such a start in this town. There's the field where I got caught after sneaking out of the house. Boy, I thought I'd never live that down. There's the city limit sign where we'd go to see the stars. And one night I let him take me way too far. It's the place my parents met, the reason I was born, where I broke my bones and broke my heart. It's the dirt road where I learned more than how to drive, and I'm thankful I was given such a start in this town. I must go, but I know with it I'll leave my heart. It's the road I have to take if I'm to chase my dreams, but I'm thankful I was given such a start in this town. In this town. In
So let's talk about Lubbock. Your history with Lubbock.
Yes, I was born and raised in Lubbock. Actually, I was born at what used to be Methodist Hospital, which is now Covenant Hospital, right across the street from here. And I actually grew up in the country somewhere between New Deal, Lubbock, and Shallow Water. And I went to New Deal schools, but of course, you wanted to do anything, we had to come into big old Lubbock, which back when I was a kid, it wasn't quite that big. But yes, I've had a very big love-hate relationship with this town for most of my life. As soon as I graduated from Monterey, I moved to Lubbock. I did bounce around to a couple of colleges in the area. I spent a year at SPC, a year out in Canyon at West Texas A&M. But yeah, I moved to Austin to be a musician, because that was the thing to do if you wanted to be a musician. You had to move there, which is not true, by the way. So I did that, and after spending over a decade there, I had some life changes, and my mom was still here, and she said, why don't you come back home? And so I decided to come back to school at Texas Tech, and things have progressed in a manner, thanks to Lubbock, that I am surprised but so grateful to. This town is really amazing.
What is it about Lubbock? Is there people who are so bored that they have to write music?
Pretty much.
I'm not knocking Lubbock. Because
no.
There is, by the way, exactly what you said. I find it very interesting that people who've lived here all their lives can be very proud of Lubbock, but they'll leak stuff, which is sort of negative, which I'm going like, boy, this isn't really helping us sell Lubbock, because I want to hire people from all over the country to come here and be great professors to teach students. I'm trying to sell Lubbock, and sometimes I'm not helped by
right.
people from Lubbock.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said there's really not much to do around here. That forces one to find things to do, whether it's take guitar lessons, whether it's, you know, write songs, anything like that. You try to find a way to fill your space. And yes, we have a huge list of amazing musicians that have come out of this town, and some that are as famous gets, some that are considered, you know, the father of rock and roll. We've got a whole bunch of stuff, which is crazy, but awesome. When I moved back here, I did not expect to find the thriving music scene that I found. Austin, it gets so much credit, but I feel the live music is so prevalent, I think people take it for granted. Everybody is so good over there that people will play for free and just to get exposure, and you will never make a living or get exposure by doing that. And so to come here to another live music scene that is thriving, and you can find great live music here 7 nights a week. It's totally amazing, and the city really appreciates it, and you can get a paycheck by doing it, and it's just really great. I was, like I said, I was very surprised, but I'm so grateful. I can't imagine now that I play music for a living what it would be like not to do that. When I was in Austin, I had to have a day job just to pay the bills. And if you're not doing all the mundane business work we talked about, you're not going to be successful. And so it makes it more difficult. It's possible here. From here, anything's possible.
We're going to talk about genre.
Yeah.
And you would say most of your songs fall under the country and Western label. Is that correct? I mean, if I haven't actually looked at that in your CDs. Does
right.
it say a little country and Western?
Technically, I refer to my music as Americana, and that is a blend of country, rock, and blues, oftentimes in the same song. And because I appreciate so many different kinds of music, and that there's no way that I cannot pull those influences into what I do.
That's a very different definition of Americana, because I think Americana is in, like, I Gave My Love a Cherry, I mean, like 18th century, you know, folk songs or something.
Well, in folk music, I definitely have folk influences in it as well, but I think Americana as a genre has evolved. Even modern country music today sounds more like twangy rap or twangy pop music. Music in general has evolved. We're going to discuss a song that's my current single that's called Country Rock and Roll, that says country is the new rock and roll. Music is just continually evolving, and so for the way that I care to look at Americana is just American music. American, all of everything comes from roots somewhere based in Americana. But to completely agree with you, the music that I put out on the radio is promoted particularly to Texas country stations. So I do write songs that are undeniably country sounding to put them out to country radio. But then I write songs for me, like we talked about, which maybe have a little more blues influence or a little more rock influence, and that's just how I prefer to do things.
Next song is Me and My Brother.
Growing up, it was just me and my brother against the world and against each other, and we rarely made it easy on our poor mom. And there was a time about 7 or 8 when things were good and life was great, but that all changed the day we lost our pa. So when I was 13 and he was 11, my brother and me robbed the 24/7, and that chewing gum never tasted so darn sweet. Well, that's when it hit me, that's when it started, the feel of the rush, the beat in my heart, and my brother right beside me, he agreed. Oh, closing time at the chicken fry. For the first time, we had money in our pockets. So we dropped out of school, cause what was the point? As long as we stayed out of the joint, we could roll from town to town and rock it. Yeah, I was Bonnie and he was Clyde, and we took off on one hell of a ride that lasted for a lifetime, so it seemed. But as we headed out of Kentucky, suddenly we weren't so lucky, so sirens in the distance began to scream. Our Chevy would go, but those cops, they just kept getting close until the long arm of the law finally caught us. And they hauled us in, us both together, but swore that'd be the last time ever. And then they threw me on a different bus. But then the day that I broke out of prison, I found my brother and headed back to Texas, back to where the story all began. And our mama cried and we hugged her neck, and she slapped us both upside the head, and we swore we'd never do that to her again. The months, they all but seemed to pass us, and my brother and me, we tried the best we could. But once you've tasted life like that, there's never any going back, and that's when we broke our mama's heart for good. So now I'm stuck here in California. My mama, yeah, she tried to warn me, but I was never any good at taking heed. I ain't seen my brother since who knows when, and I'm not sure I ever will again, cause the warden says she'll throw away the key.
So there's a lyric here. When I was 13 and he was 11, my brother and me robbed a 24/7, and that chewing gum never tasted so darn sweet. When we read this in one of your songs, we are to assume that this is based on a real incident.
That is true. Right. In all fairness, my brother stole the gum. I had nothing to do with it.
I think the statute of limitations has expired.
I swear, though, I was such a good child. I didn't rebel till I got into college. I was such a good girl. My brother stole a pack of gum from, I thought it was a 7-Eleven. My mom says it was United. I guess we'll agree to disagree. And I remember that happening when it did, and he got in so much trouble, my mom made him take it back to the store and paid for it, apologized profusely and everything. And so one day, I swear it's weird, the song came to me in a dream. Like, I just woke up with this brother-sister bank robber theme, Bonnie and Clyde thing going on in my head. And I woke up and I wrote that song the minute I woke up. And yes, all based off of my brother's kleptomania. You know, I'm sure he doesn't like for me to tell that story, but hi, I love you.
He no longer steals gum from United.
He no longer steals gum.
I'm sure our listeners of this.
Maybe HEB. He lives in Austin now, but no, he's good. He grew up to be a very fine young man. I wrote my first song when I was 8.
What was it about?
It was about my parents' divorce. Personally, I have written more based off my experience because I say it's cheaper than therapy. You know, it's a good way to just get it out, and it's very cathartic. And yeah, I'm not having to pay someone to listen to my problems. In fact, people pay me to listen to my problems, which is kind of fun. But there is a creative writing aspect of it. And me and my brother is a great example. While it stems from a tiny grain of truth, I was able to take that song and just make something completely fabricated and wild and outrageous and just totally fun. And that was another one for me. So we were talking about the yeah, yeah, yes and the oh, oh, ohs. All we do for the chorus is yodel, and it took me a lot of convincing to tell myself, that's okay. That's okay that you did that. It's not Bob Dylan. It's not, you know, anything deep and emotional, but people are going to have fun with it, and they did. They do.
Next song is Look at Me Now.
My mama anything and put this guitar in my hands. Now here I am standing before you, just another face, another crowd. Look at me now, and look at me. Sometimes I so wonder why only a fool would meet me home after school to tell me and my mama goodbye. Now here I am standing before you, just another stage, another crowd. Look at me now, look at me now.
How do you feel comfortable with the idea that people are judging you, appearance, sound? You talked about maybe getting dressed up because we were taking some pictures here. You are well known, probably more than most people, your face, your voice. Are you conscious that when you're at the supermarket, I mean, you never leave the house in baggy sweats and your hair up? I mean,
pretty much now.
You care about what people see you when you're not on the stage?
I do now. When I was going to school here, DG can probably vouch, I never wore makeup. My hair was always in a ponytail. But that was before anybody knew me. And then, yes, now that people know who I am, I will not leave the house without some form of makeup on my face. Which, if you'd known how anti-makeup I was in my younger years, and it's just kind of funny. It is intimidating. And there are definitely times when it gets to me, or I wonder, like, to be truthful, at a restaurant, we'll say, a table gets up and leaves while I'm singing, I go, oh, I hope it wasn't something I did, you know? And then part of me goes, well, you know that they probably just finished their meal and they paid their tab and it has nothing to do with you. Oh, but what if it was? And then, oh, it hurts my feelings. Ah, don't let it hurt your feelings. There's this constant battle.
Wow, you are intellectual.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I'm an overthinker. I don't know if I call it an intellectual, but overthinker, absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't write about this a lot, but you do, I think, imply in some of your music the question of being a woman as well as being an artist. Is there a double standard?
Without a
because
doubt.
I'm assuming that a male country and western singer can probably just slip on some jeans and some boots and go outside and
baseball
if somebody
cap,
meets them,
yeah,
and doesn't really have to worry about as much as you would, and Taylor Swift getting up in the morning.
And the sad part of it is I don't even think that the double standard is hidden. It's very well known, very spoken about, to the point of even how the music gets played. I did an interview with a DJ one time at a station I will remain nameless that openly told me they weren't allowed to play two girl songs in a row. And I did another interview where the guy pointed out that out of 100 songs and artists for the top 100 on the Texas music charts, 8 of them were girls. I could be crazy, but that ratio seems to be a little unbalanced, especially when you look at how many people are in the scene. Yes, girls have to look pretty. Girls have to wear makeup. Girls have to get up on stage and look a certain way that guys don't. Girls have to work twice as hard. I've had people in the business tell me, well, good luck, because you're going to have to work harder than any guy I know. And they don't even try to hide it. It's completely
and,
open.
And the
to
working
talk about.
Is not just the writing. I mean, it's the other associated tasks with being a performer.
The performing itself.
Could you give an example of when you're performing where you think you have to work harder in the performance than a male singer?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I certainly have to be more entertaining, I think.
In what
way? Because a guy can just get up there and stand and sing. But when a girl does that, she's looked at as not entertaining, boring. I have to dance around. I have to make you notice me. I have to look as pretty as I can look. Things that, like I said, I don't think guys have to worry about. In fact, I know that they don't. I know that they don't.
Next song is Someone to Believe.
On a bus from California, city lights behind her, a country girl is going home. She's been aching for her freedom, finally doesn't need him. It took a while, but now she's gone.
So let's talk about that. Would you describe yourself as cynical? You have a phrase here in the lyrics. Cause he didn't love her like he should have loved her. He didn't care about her dreams. He didn't hold her. He just carelessly broke her when she needed someone to believe. That's pretty strong stuff. Is it very easy to become very cynical about people in the music industry?
You know, actually, I don't find myself to be cynical. In fact, I think I'm one of the more optimistic, just go-getters out there. I have a very good outlook on things most of the time. In fact, I feel very blessed in this business. I perhaps am cynical about changing the world, or maybe just, like I said, that's not my focus. But that particular song, it's not about being cynical about people. That's an actual, that's a true story. And that's not even a love song. I mean, it is in the way that I wrote it, but the inspiration actually came from a platonic friendship that I had with a guy, and he just was more against me than for me, I felt like. And so that's where that line came from. But no, I don't think I'm cynical. I do take everything with a grain of salt, as I like to say, because people in this business will blow smoke, you know, like you wouldn't believe. And you just eventually go, oh, yeah, well, I'll believe it when I see it. But you smile
when the check cashes,
move on.
I'll agree with you, yeah.
And that's probably the first time anyone's ever called me cynical. You're going to turn me cynical now.
I've ruined your...
You've ruined my day.
Your optimism.
I'm cynical now.
Country rock and roll, the next song.
Are you here to drink? Here to drown your blues? Did you come to wash the work week off your shoes? Maybe meet someone, or here to just have fun? Well, here we go. Let me show you country is the new. and roll.
Jenny, I had never heard any of your music before the first time that we were met. We met and we were introduced by a fellow graduate of the college, and you gave me a couple of CDs. I think you're incredibly talented.
Thank
and you.
You
also struck me as somebody who, if you had woken up 10 years ago and said, I will write for opera or I will write classical music, you probably would have been very successful with those genres.
I wish I had done that. Woken up 10 years ago and knew what I wanted to do, I mean.
You chose, I guess, what might be labeled modern Americana. Why did you? And do you feel the genre has any limitations? Because a lot of your songs have some of the familiar tropes, like the bar, you know, the guitars. You refer to certain things which are part of country and western. Of course, the melody and the style within the country and western. Do you feel that that's a liberation for your muse, or do you feel constricted sometimes? You want to wake up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm going to write a rap song. I'm just going to do it.
Well, I don't feel constricted because if I wake up in the morning and I want to write a rap song, I do. There are a lot of songs that I write that are just 100% blues, and there's no denying that it's a blues song. But oddly enough, country has not always been my genre of choice, or even Americana. When I was living in Austin, I was a folk singer out to change the world. I was very political in my thinking, and I was a totally different person in that town. I came to Lubbock in 2010, and it really has changed me. I had no intention of starting a country band. I had no intention of starting to write country music or buying cowboy boots. I wear cowboy boots almost every day, which is just crazy for me because I was not that girl.
So if somebody saw you at United wearing Prada, that would like hurt your brand.
Well, I don't know that would hurt my brand, but I think they would definitely be surprised to see me in Prada. It's not very often that I don't wear cowboy boots to a show, especially unless it's a million degrees and I'm on the Abuelos patio or something. I might be in flip-flops or sandals, but I just kind of actually just fell into country when I came here, and it seems to be what works for me, at least in this particular arena. And because of the success I've seen from it, I chose to continue it, but it certainly will not limit the way that I write music. It may limit the music I can release as a single to the radio. I can't send my blues song to that country station over there. But I try to find a balance with that as well. And the rest of the United States that doesn't subscribe to the Texas country platform, we actually do push the more Americana style, like Free Whiskey was one of our singles, and things like that that we can put on a lot of college stations, actually, like that kind of music. And so I try to play the field.
Well, I'm going to tell you, in fact, I can ask you on air for permission to this, is we have been talking about updating the intro theme for our broadcast, and I'd like it to be Free Whiskey, because I was so impressed by that song. Do we have permission?
I would be honored. Please use my song. Yes.
So, Derek, this is going to be the first show where we're going to have Free Whiskey instead of putting on the Ritz. I guess
nice.
We need to update our genre there.
When you walked in the room, they all looked out. I was the only fool sticking around. I should have known right then and there that it was trouble coming towards my chair, but I never want to turn Free Whiskey down. You came up and asked me for a light, asked me if I came alone tonight. Said, bartender, can you help me please? Won't you get this lady what she needs? And I never want to turn Free Whiskey down. Just like I'm hooked on whiskey.
So Free Whiskey, which you noted in your notes to me, is your anthem. Is that correct? Is
it? That's pretty true.
Were you joking, or is this you would say this is your theme song?
Free Whiskey is definitely my anthem, and I'm so proud of that song. It's so much fun. It's like country meets New Orleans music, and yes, the hook is I'm never one to turn free whiskey down, and no truer statement has ever been spoken.
Again, I find this interesting balance here. If anybody spent some time with you, as they are in the radio, but like in person, not you on stage, would come away thinking this is a really highly intelligent, thoughtful, intellectual businesswoman, very, very confident, shrewd. Again, that word. And this is this song not that? Or is this just, as we were talking about before, where you're sort of choosing different aspects, different facets of a personality, and one happens to be in a song? It doesn't negate the other, right?
I think that's absolutely true. I love to have a good time. I love to be silly. I love to cut loose. I laugh at my jokes probably more than anyone else. In fact, we have this joke that we say in the band, Jenny Dale Lord Band, great music, bad jokes. Like, if you ever come to a show, we're making bad jokes the whole time, and we love to just have a good time and cut loose, and so I do the same thing in my songs, and Free Whiskey is just a let's just get crazy and just be silly and just write a really fun anthem sort of a song. It got the title track to our newest album, so definitely very happy with the way that song turned out. I know it's my producer's favorite song on the Free Whiskey album. It's fun.
Next song, Back There Again.
After getting older, no matter how I try to stop the clock, time keeps moving on. How can I be older when it feels like yesterday I was just a girl living at home, and my mama would yell down the street, kids, it's time to come meet, and we'd go running in. Oh, to be back there again. Climbing trees and falling down, Daddy makes the world go round, Brother is my only enemy, and Mama's kids heal the pain of any wound and every break. Growing up will take eternity. If only I'd known then. Oh, to be back there again.
Climbing trees and falling down, Daddy makes the world go round, Brother is my only enemy, and Mama's kiss can heal the pain. So this song is some memory shards, right? From
absolutely.
From your own life. Do you mine your memory bank for song ideas that you think other people will relate to or that mean something to you in particular?
I try to find a balance of both. Initially, it is about me expressing something that I need to express at the time, but I think there's a universal quality, things are universal in the sense that all of us have had to grow up, and chances are all of us have done a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I don't know many people as they get older who don't just go, oh, I would love to be back there again. Back There Again, I jokingly refer to as my midlife crisis song. I hope that that's the case. I guess only time will tell. But yeah, it's just about dealing with getting older and being nostalgic, missing your childhood. And, you know, there's a line in there, just because sometimes I like to be tongue-in-cheek, that says, gravity was my friend. I think every woman can relate to that. I have heard that men have to deal with the battles of gravity as well, but I don't think it's, at least in my mind, not near as noticeable. There you go.
Next song is Already Gone.
He said, I'm going back to West Virginia. Texas plains really ain't my style. I miss the Appalachians in the springtime. God, I haven't seen them in a while. He said I miss my family out in Charleston, and I've been craving mama's apple pie. His baby sister's gonna have her first one, and he'd sure love to be there by her side. So first thing in the morning, he's getting on that plane. He picked the perfect day to leave, 'cause it's supposed to rain. But what I don't get is why he let me hold on for so long, when he was already gone. She said, this time I'm headed out to Nashville. I met a man who says he'll take me far. After all these years of searching, I have found it. Chance I need to finally be a star. She said each time I left you, I was trying to find a way to make these dreams come true. And she's sorry that she couldn't take me with her. She thought I'd understand more than I do. So first thing in the morning, she's getting on that plane. She picked the perfect day to leave, 'cause it's supposed to rain. But what I don't get is why she let me hold on for so long, and she was already gone.
Do you ever, like, watch people and go, what are they talking? Look at the way that woman seems sad. Are they having a bet? I mean, are they breaking up in front of me here? Do you overhear conversations at the coffee shop and go, like, wow, that's interesting. I want to take that little snippet there. Are you more observant than other people because all of your observations are going to lead to a creative output?
Well, I can't speak for other people, and I certainly don't want to sound any more cynical than I already do. So people, I don't know, I can be observant. I think it really just depends on what I'm doing. I do have a horribly bad habit of, when I'm playing a show, of paying more attention to what other people are doing than even really paying attention to what I'm doing, which has definitely caused a problem a time or two as far as the way my brain goes. But yeah, I pay attention a lot to what they're saying, and especially with the way things have been going in my life lately, which are pretty dang good, it's hard to have something to write about when you're doing the same thing every day and everything's stable and everything is good. So you have to draw inspiration from other things that are going on around you. So I definitely try to do that as much as I can.
The last song we're going to talk about is Crazy.
There's an empty bottle sitting on the floorboard, an empty screaming ringing in my head, a mailbox cuddled up against my car door, and the memory of her life in your bed. And there's a suitcase that is packing in the hallway, a pile of pictures shattered on the floor, a longing for a time when things went my way, and a loss of memory from the night before. I must have gone crazy, just lost it completely. What have I done? Thought you were the one, went out of my mind. And there's no denying, there's something inside me, enjoying the tinge of sweet, sweet revenge that must have been mine. I'm not sure if there's any need to worry. My mama, well, she raised a good, good girl. But part of me feels some strange need to hurry, while the other part's inside a tilt-a-whirl. And I'm not sure about my usually good. good intentions, the ones that always had the best of me. Many things I know I ought to question, like that empty can of gasoline. I must have gone crazy. The borderline coming up ahead, and 1,000 miles behind me in this old Ford, and the memory of her lying in your bed.
You begin by saying there's an empty bottle sitting on the floorboard, an empty screaming ringing in my head, a mailbox cuddled up against my car door, and the memory of her lying in your bed.
Yes. All right. So crazy is my first experience in what I referred to earlier as creative writing. When I was younger, my mom told me that all of my songs sounded the same, and that really stuck with me. And so I think a lot of the reason why I try to go across genres the way that I do is an intentional way of not having my songs sound the same. So crazy, when I wrote this song, I thought, well, you know what? I've never written a boom chick, boom chick, boom chick song. I've never written a two chord song. Well, what if I pick this tempo and I pick this chord and I do this? What would I want to say about that? What does it sound like? And I just had this whole vision of this scorned lover who burns down her boyfriend's house after catching him in bed with someone else, and just like this wild, angry ride. This is my first angry chick revenge song, is what I call it. But I tell the boys in my
band, it'll be a great album, right? The Angry Chick Revenge.
Won't be my last one with those guys, I'll tell you. So, so it was just that's the way that one really came about. And that was actually my first radio single, also, and it did fairly well. And it's just a fun fake, I say that so they don't come arrest me, song.
Well, Jenny Dale Lord is a very talented artist, and we thank you very much for being here today. You are a beautiful, wonderful credit to our college.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate you having me on, and guns up.
Guns up. Thank you, Jenny Dale Lord. And we'll go out with our new theme song, Free Whiskey.
Just like